bringing the stories of people just like us directly into your home and learning more about them. This is Trent Speaks.
Hello.
Hi, Amy. It's Trent.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Amy is this week's guest on the Trent Speaks podcast. Welcome in, everyone. And I want to say welcome to our newest platform, YouTube. If you haven't yet subscribed to my YouTube channel, Trent Speaks, go ahead and do so. I already have my first subscriber. Shout out to my coworker and friend, Victoria, for being subscriber number one. So, very interesting. I was having some technical difficulties as I was getting ready to record. I was freaking out because I didn't think it recorded in my recording software because I was also using a video software, and I did two in one night. So we have this week's and next week's already recorded. Things are going to get busy for me, and so I want to make sure I'm still delivering you solid content as we keep on moving along week after week with the podcast. You know, a couple weeks ago, I had mentioned that I had sent out letters to Jimmy Fallon, Ellen DeGeneres, a couple other companies. The only company I had heard back from, if you remember, was the local brewery. They were unfortunately too busy to talk to me. I haven't heard back from anyone. I haven't heard back from Ellen. And I thought, all people, Ellen, obviously I wasn't going to get my hopes up, but Ellen might be the person I hear back from. It's Ellen, for Pete's sake. She wants to help other people. Where are you at, girl? Where are you at? Oh, well, what can you do except keep on trying? That's right. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep on trying until I get onto Ellen's show. You know, in our central office, I was over there the other day, and I saw this calendar on national or international left-handers day. Shout out to my left-handers out there. You all know who you are because I don't. But one of the best holidays of the year, International Left-Handers Day. And then I also noticed on the calendar, I missed Professional Speakers Day on August 7th. Now, I didn't even know that was a thing, but apparently it's a thing. And I never would have known that. Who knew? All right. You always know whenever I get to the point of rambling, it's time to jump into the podcast this week. One thing I do want to quick mention, though, is, again, I'm on YouTube now. However, it has been a little slow getting up on YouTube. Long story short, because you really don't care, it's taking me a little bit longer because of the way I need to reformat some things, the way I've done them in the past. My hope is that I can start to get video up there, and this will actually be the first video YouTube, because I hadn't been recording video previously. Is it going to create a lot more work on my end? 100% yes. But I figured expanding the platform is only going to benefit me. It's not going to hurt me. And like I said, it's something I enjoy doing, and we'll talk a lot more about that next week. But right now, for this week, we're going to jump right back in talking to Amy. And one thing you'll learn is you should go to the dentist. Because for Amy, what started out as a routine dentist trip turned into a life-changing event. Well, thanks for being on the podcast today.
Absolutely. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Though I felt like I needed to start with the same disclaimer with Amy that I pretty much give to everyone once I start the interview. I'm going to be honest, I'm really awkward when I'm trying to get started because I never know how to get into it. So I'm just going to somehow get into this.
That's fine. I'm cool with just diving right into that. There's no problem with that. So.
All right, perfect. We will just dive right in then.
Okay.
So, Amy, we talked a little bit earlier in the week, and the question that a lot of people actually have when they start on the podcast, or when I ask them if they would be willing to be on the podcast, is like, okay, well, what would I talk about? And it's a very common question from everyone that I talk to saying you should be on the podcast. Well, what would I talk about? And when I asked you earlier in the week, I said, you know, you can talk about anything that like impacted you in your life or that you learned or that shaped you. And one thing you mentioned was that you have a history of cancer, and that sounds like it's had a powerful impact, really on your life overall.
For sure. Yeah. I was officially diagnosed when I was 19 years old. But the actual, spot or growth, I should say, had been there or had been present for about 6 years beforehand. The type of cancer I had was called chondroblastic osteosarcoma, which is, I guess, just a fancy way of saying bone cancer. And typically it's found in children, and it's usually found in like the long bone, so your arms or your legs. Mine happened to have been located in the jaw, so like the very front part of my jaw, like chin area, which is a rarity. If it is found in your jaw, it's usually found in the longer part, I think, like from your ear, you know, in that area, so like near your ear. But mine was front and center. And the actual spot that I had was visible. It's right on the gum line. It was near my teeth. I mean, I had gone to doctors when I was younger, when I first noticed it. And they said, it's just a bone fragment. Don't worry about it. It's nothing. So, you know, I went through a good chunk of my childhood thinking, okay, it's just a bone fragment, nothing to worry about. And then my dad changed insurances, and we had to change dentist, just regular dentist, and I went in for a normal checkup, and the dentist saw this particular spot, which by that point in time, I was starting to notice a little bit of a looseness of the tooth there, like the canine tooth, and then some hot and cold sensitivity, and so they noticed it, or I explained it to them. And they're like, oh, well, we're just going to take an x-ray and see what happens. And there was a shadow on the x-ray. And the actual spot, just to kind of quickly backtrack, the actual spot itself, or the actual, you know, I guess now I can say that it was a tumor, was probably about the size of like a pea, like a green pea or whatever. So not terribly big, but definitely, you know, noticeable. And so the dentist saw the shadow, and they're like, okay, well, with your symptoms plus what we see, we're going to refer you to a root canal specialist. And so we went to that appointment. The root canal specialist did his thing. It was negative. And they're like, okay, well, we'll send you to an oral surgeon because, you know, that's the next step. So I saw the oral surgeon. The oral surgeon was like, yep, this has to come out. It's disintegrating your jaw. You're going to lose the tooth. They did the biopsy right after I came back from my very first spring break, and it came back positive. The dentist or the oral surgeon was like, no, this can't be. So they sent it out to four or five other places or other hospitals just to confirm the diagnosis. It still came back positive. And I got a call the day before my follow-up appointment from the oral surgeon's office, and they're like, well, just make sure you have somebody with you when you come. And I didn't think anything of it. I'm 19. I'm going to college and just kind of living my life. And so my dad came with me, and the oral surgeon was like, I've never told anybody this before, or I've never had to tell anybody like this before, but you have cancer. And the office was great. I don't really remember anything after that other than you have appointments with this doctor and this doctor, and you go to them. So they sent me to a large in-state hospital. And they took great care of me. I did 9 months of chemotherapy on a pediatric floor. And here I am. I'm 19 years old, and I'm surrounded by kids a whole lot younger than I was. They definitely tolerated treatment much better than I did. I mean, they're riding their IV poles. They're wearing masks. The pediatric floor was incredible. I can't say enough about them. They did everything they could to kind of accommodate a young adult. You know, and I've got nurses that are taking care of me that are just a few years older than me. So they were fantastic. But what they didn't anticipate was a reaction that I had to one of the chemotherapy agents. Another rarity is to be allergic to the drug methotrexate. Methotrexate is also used to treat, like, rheumatoid arthritis and, you know, some of those types of conditions. So I had a near-death reaction to it. And turns out that I am, like, number 13 or 14 in the U.S. that have the type of cancer I did, and then number 13 or 14, I can't remember which is which, but 13 or 14 in the world to be allergic to methotrexate.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was a really, really intense experience. So there was that reaction. And then because they threw so many drugs at me the night of my reaction, because I couldn't breathe, I couldn't swallow, they had to give me, like, Narcan to reverse everything. And so, I mean, they were pumping drugs to me left and right to try to counter whatever it was that was causing the reaction, because they've never had anything like this before. They wanted to do a test to rule out whether or not it was the actual, you know, methotrexate that caused it. And so they scheduled what they called a patch test, where what they were going to do is they were just going to give me just an injection, like if you were getting a flu shot or something. They were going to give me a patch test, and they were just going to watch how I reacted to it. The night of the test, they gave it to me, and I was describing symptoms, you know, of my tongue feels really thick, I'm having a little trouble swallowing, and then I'm like, I can't breathe. They should have stopped the test when I started saying that my tongue was feeling a little thick. So needless to say that the test went on a lot longer than it should have, and it was another night where I almost died. So Narcan, crash cart, all that stuff. So they definitely ruled that it was the chemotherapy that caused it, and I can no longer have it. But it was a very humbling experience for me, because in addition to the chemo, I had to have basically my entire face reconstructed. You know, they had to reform my jaw. They had to graft bone, and I had to learn how to talk without teeth, because they had to remove, like, a fairly large portion of the front of my face to do it. And looking at myself now, I mean, if you've seen pictures of me, so they've done a very good job at reconstructing and being able to help me regain that that, I guess, normalcy of the face and being able to speak. So, but during that time, I realized just the importance of caring for others, and you know, not only caring for them, but also being dependent on them to care for you as well. It was, you know, a very interesting and enlightening experience. You know, the nurses that took care of me were phenomenal, especially in those trying times. And so it made me realize that I wanted to care for others as well. I tried to go to school after that. Originally, my degree was going to be in criminal justice. It was psychology with a minor in criminal justice. And then I was like, after treatments were done and I was okay to go back to school, I'm like, oh, I've got to go to nursing. I'm going to go to nursing. And then I realized that there was a lot of math involved, and I'm not very good at math. So I'm like, okay, so let's stick with the helping route, but let's see what else we can do. So my degree changed several times over the years, but I ended up with a degree in criminal justice. You know, and my internship after, you know, for the degree, for the bachelor's degree, was as a victim advocate for the domestic violence unit. And I got to go to court and kind of work as a liaison between the victim and the attorney, the prosecuting attorney, over the case, and kind of explain and kind of be that voice for the person who had, you know, gone through the trouble. So it was, I guess, all in all, I guess you could say that just learning to care for others and help others was something, the positive that came out of the diagnosis after all, so.
Yeah, Amy, and I know that you touched on it a little bit already, but you had even mentioned a couple of days ago how the you having cancer taught you that there are people that are compassionate and being kind to strangers and paying it forward. Can you kind of talk a little bit more about that piece, about how that came about, and are you a person that typically pays it forward, or what is what is the impact of all that on you?
For me, when I was first diagnosed and when I first had my very first treatment, it's obviously it's a scary time for anybody to go through that when you're a child or a young adult. This particular hospital kind of gave you a, for lack of a better term, a host family or somebody, a family that would help welcome you to the floor, show you where things are at. Talk to them about their experience, you know, because it wasn't just me going through this, it was my parents as well. I always had somebody there with me, and I had a younger brother at home as well. So one parent would be there, the other parent would be at home. And so the host family or the welcome family would try to, when they knew I was on the floor, they would stop in. And so they would offer you know, to chip in and we'll team up and our families will buy dinner for, you know, and split dinner together. Or, you know, the art instructor on the floor would go around and do what they could to try to engage me in an art project if I was feeling well enough to do that. Or, you know, there was always some way of being involved during these times, and my parents were actually able to become a host family as well, and a welcome family to another, you know, new person on the floor. And so watching them and being able to, when I was physically able to speak, to be able to speak to the young person that I was matched with, and to just kind of explain to them my, you know, my experiences, the good, and, you know, obviously there's bad too, but just being able to be there and just kind of be a friendly face during it all, because, the treatments sometimes can last a day or two, and then you might end up getting an infection and be back in the hospital again a week later for infusions of hydration or, you know, blood transfusion or anything. So there was a lot involved. I myself was in the hospital basically 2 weeks a month, every month, for a good 7 months. So, yeah, I grew up in Saginaw, and it was about an hour and a half drive, you know, to go down for treatment. But it was also, you know, to go back down there as well for the infections and the treatments of that as well. The city, Saginaw wasn't quite capable of handling that for me. So, but just being able to pay it forward. And then after I was, you know, technically better or well in remission, our family, because the art teacher was so incredible to us, we purchased a ton of supplies and we donated them to the art room in honor of this art teacher and the care that they provided for us. And since then, I've done various activities for my employer, my job. I work for the state of Michigan as a disability claims specialist. So being able to be compassionate to those who are struggling with some form of a disability, whether it's physical or mental, as just a caseworker as well. I try to do that every day. But, you know, just other community activities that our office will sponsor, such as like a pet food drive. I helped kind of organize a drive for our local animal shelter, in which we brought in a picture of our favorite pet, but at the same time, we also brought in canned foods and treats and toys and litter for the cats or whatever. And then every year, our office does, supplies for the homeless, food bank drives, and I definitely try to get behind or get involved with those as well. So just anything that I can do to share and spread love, and, you know, just touch somebody's life, whether they know my name or not, is another, you know, it just makes me feel like I'm, you know, making some positive mark in the world.
Well, and that's really all that matters in the end anyway, is how do you feel about it? Because I think sometimes, even in today's world, I think there are people that will do things for the recognition or for a popularity thing. When really we lose the idea and the what's really there is really you should be doing it out of the kindness of your heart and just to feel good, not because it'll make you look good necessarily.
Right. And I'm trying to teach that with my children. You know, my youngest definitely is really latching on to that, you know, being able to donate books, you know, that he no longer reads to another little boy or little girl that might like it, or some of his toys when it's time to clean out his toys. You know, it might be special to you, you know, or it was once special to you. However, you haven't played with it in 6 months. Let's see, you know, I bet you it'll be just as special to another person who decides that they want this toy as well. So, or even, you know, for Toys for Tots, you know, purchasing a toy that way as well. So I definitely am trying to show and instill these values into my children as well.
And I'm glad you brought up your children. It's almost like you can see my question sheet here. I was going to say, you're a wife, you're a mother. There are parents that listen to the show, whether they're new parents or upcoming parents, or they've been parents for a couple of years. What advice would you have to parents? I mean, I'm sure you have years of experience at this point.
I do. I have a 14-year-old and I have a 7-year-old.
Oh, yeah. Years of experience.
Years. You're on the job, hands-on experience. I would honestly say just patience. And it's really, it's a battle every day. And it's actually kind of funny that you bring this up today. I'm doing a civil service class or an in training class over the next 3 days, and today was the first day. We're doing the 7 habits of highly effective people or individuals. And so today was our day one of the class, and I am learning a lot, not only about myself as an employee, but as a person and as a parent too. But one of the things is just be patient. Don't be so quick to react, especially if you're dealing with young ones. You know, try to think on their level and take a breath. If you need to walk away for a minute, walk away. But definitely be patient with them. And certainly don't compare child A to B to child B to C or however many kids you have. They all learn differently. And, you know, whereas one might be a verbal, you know, better with verbal instructions, another might be better with actually doing or seeing or both, you know. So definitely don't rush things, and then certainly enjoy every minute of it. Don't waste it away because it goes so fast. I see my oldest, who will be a freshman this year, and I realize that while she's always my daughter and she's always my oldest, the time that we have, you know, together, you know, as possibly living under my house, if she decides to go away to college and eventually, you know, go on to be her own individual, it goes by so fast, you know. So certainly enjoy every precious minute that you have with them.
And Amy, the last question I always ask people, because I always feel like ending on a positive note, what is it that you want people to learn or take away from your story or your experiences? And it may be something that you've talked about on the podcast. It may be something you haven't talked about.
Find little things to be grateful for. For me, at my lowest of lows, you know, it was the breeze, you know, driving or riding around in the car with the windows down, seeing the leaves change. Hearing the laughter, you can find little things to be grateful for, even in your darkest, lowest of times. Because, you know, even when you think that there isn't anything, there's still always a sunrise and there's still always a sunset. And they're equally beautiful, regardless if you are the happiest person in the world or if you are, you know, miserable and, you know, just feel like everything is crap. Just find the little things in life to be thankful for, hold on to those things, and then you'll start to see the bigger picture and find more things to be happy about.
It was refreshing to hear Amy talk about that. Think about it. Amy said, be thankful because there's always a sunrise, always a sunset. And she talked about how it's the little things. And I think too often, even I heard this, I shockingly went on a morning run the other day because I finally resumed Tough Mudder training. And even the running coach in the app that I listened to had kind of said this as well, that we need to really be thankful for each and every day. Because sometimes we take for granted waking up every morning, when really, think about what the opposite could be. And so, it's, like I said, it was very refreshing to hear Amy talking about that. And I think that's a perspective that we need to all switch our minds into, because it's not a perspective or it's not a mindset that we're in enough. Folks, you can find me on SoundCloud.com, Apple Podcasts, and now YouTube. YouTubers can see that I recorded the intro and outro on a different day because of the outfit that I'm wearing, and they differ. By the time this gets onto YouTube, it'll probably be next week already. Don't get me wrong, I'm going to try and get it up as soon as possible. However, I need to catch up in getting up all the old ones on before I can start to catch up getting the new ones on. I'm rambling. I'm going to shut up. SoundCloud.com, Apple Podcasts, and now YouTube, Trent Speaks. Go ahead and find me. You can also find me on Facebook at Trent Speaks as well. Next week, we'll be talking to Will and the story about how I got Will fired. That and more on next week's Trent Speaks podcast. Take care.